Welcome to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. To join the conversation, call 508-871-7000. Now, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good morning, New England. You are tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830. He's Terry Hendricks. Good morning. I'm John Featherston. And from Yahoo News, on the phone right now, Michael Isikoff. Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Michael. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking a couple minutes to join us here on All Politics is Local. How are you on this Sunday morning?
Very good. Very good.
So a lot of things to talk about, but let's first get to your new article that you put up on Yahoo News about Donald Trump. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, we took a look at the judge who Donald Trump has been deriding and suggesting because of his Mexican heritage he can't make fair rulings in the Trump University case. The judge, of course, is from Indiana, the son of Mexican immigrants, went to law school in Indiana, became a assistant U.S. attorney in San Diego, and prosecuted the Mexican drug cartels. In fact, he was in charge of the Narcotics Enforcement Division of the U.S. Attorney's Office. He so vigorously prosecuted those cartels that they actually put a hit on him, approved by one of Mexico's most powerful drug lords. The judge, Gonzalo Curiel, then a prosecutor, had to live under marshal's protection for over a year. He was moved to a naval base. One of the leaders of the U.S. government's assault on the Mexican drug cartels. And this is the guy that Donald Trump is suggesting can't be fair to him because of his Mexican heritage. These are comments that have, you know, really stunned Republican Party officials, caused Paul Ryan to raise questions, Newt Gingrich to raise questions. I mean, you know, Donald Trump has said a lot of extremely controversial things in the course of his presidential campaign, but this may just be the furthest he's gone, and I think it's raising serious questions on the part of a lot of Republican Party officials about whether they can associate themselves with Donald Trump.
Well, if you look at it, since the beginning of the campaign, Donald Trump has said one thing after another that's been outrageous. You know, he was picking on John McCain for a while, and it seems like every time he's done that, he's picked up another 4 or 5 points in the polls, and he's gotten quite a ways. Actually, he's the nominee on the Republican side by being outlandish. So,
yeah, I just wonder whether he's jumped the shark with this one. I mean, this cuts against, you know, every core American value. I mean, across the political spectrum, we sort of recognize we're all Americans. Everybody has equal rights. These are not sort of, contested questions for people across the political spectrum. And to suggest that a federal judge can't be fair because of his ethnicity, we will see, but I would not be surprised if this basically sinks Donald Trump. I think Hillary Clinton, if she wins California, and, especially by sort of 5 points or more, she will then, Bernie Sanders will fold. She'll get a bounce in the polls next week. She'll be up by 10 points or more. And at that point, it'll be really hard for people to see how Donald Trump could come back. I could be wrong. A lot of people have been wrong in this election. But, you know, I think this was the tipping point for Donald Trump.
Yeah, but it's a long way till November.
It's a long way to November. We'll see.
I mean, what are your thoughts on Trump's candidacy? I mean,
on what?
On overall his candidacy, how he's been doing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if you had asked me a week and a half ago, I thought he would have had a 1 in 3, 1 in 4 chance of winning. Now I think it's maybe 1 in 50. I, you know, if that. I, you know, just come back to, He is testing the limits. Look at Newt Gingrich's comments today to the Washington Post. Look at what Paul Ryan said. I mean, basically, people are saying, you know, and I think, you know, imagine what Republican donors who had signed up to be with Donald Trump are thinking at this moment. They're thinking we've gotten aboard a sinking ship.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Terry and I are both conservative Republicans, and we've been covering Trump from a media standpoint. It's been fascinating to cover him from a media standpoint. But as a conservative Republican, I mean, he wasn't my first choice. He wasn't my second choice. He wasn't my third choice. And I'm actually married.
What did you think of his comments about the judge?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, they're outrageous. I mean, you know, but it's classic Trump. He's deflecting. He deflects everything. I mean, he's the best deflector I've ever seen. And he's just trying to, you know, get off, you know, he doesn't want to talk about Trump University, and he's just trying to deflect everything. And I agree. You know, some of the comments are going to come back to bite him. You know, the comments about the New Mexico governor, I think, are going to come back to bite him as well. And, I mean, he does have his loyal supporters to, like, what Terry was saying. But, you know, I find his most loyal supporters are hardworking union Democrats and not conservative Republicans. So I find it's going to be fascinating. But I also wanted to talk to you about Hillary Clinton. I mean, what if Bernie Sanders wins California on Tuesday?
I think up to a week ago, I thought Bernie Sanders had a really good shot of winning California. And I think that on top of that, you know, very damning State Department Inspector General report had really weakened Hillary. But, you know, she does have a knack for, she's a fighter in her own way. The speech she gave on Thursday was, you know, I thought the best speech she's ever given. It was a knockout punch. I mean, because she just laid it out for why Trump on foreign policy is, you know, has not come up with any kind of coherent plan and says a lot of things that have truly spooked a lot of people around the world. About the idea of this guy being in charge of the nuclear codes. I mean, you know, so my guess is she's going to come back, and she'll win California now. She's got a lot of baggage, and, you know, the email thing isn't over. There was some, you know, kind of a provocative filing from a federal judge just on Friday demanding that the lawyers for Brian Pigliano lay out the nature of their immunity agreement, with the Justice Department in the email investigation. The email investigation is not over. I would not be surprised if the FBI has got some stuff that we don't know about that makes this more problematic than the Clinton campaign would like to suggest. But, you know, at the end of the day, short of a criminal indictment of Hillary Clinton, and, you know, you talk to lots of legal experts and former law enforcement people, nobody really sees that coming. Short of that, you know, she's going to be able to skate by on this one.
Is that because of her last name? Or
no, because
she really Teflon coated
a criminal case against a political party nominee is, you know, the bar is really high. You've got to have really compelling testimony of willful intent to violate the law to bring a criminal case. The FBI knows that, and the Justice Department knows that. And unless they've got witnesses who can say, I went in there to Hillary Clinton and said, you can't do this, it's going to expose national security secrets, and she said, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway, this is the way I want to do business. Short of really compelling testimony like that, which we have not seen, it's really hard to see them bring in a criminal case.
But I think they have something like that because, you know, when somebody was bringing that kind of viewpoint to it, they were told this has all been cleared through legal, and it wasn't cleared through legal.
Right, right. No, that's true. That's in the Inspector General's report, but it didn't come from Hillary Clinton. It didn't come from Cheryl Mills. It didn't come from Huma Abedin. It came from a State Department bureaucrat. Now, was that an overzealous bureaucrat, or was he taking orders from somebody inside the Clinton campaign or inside Secretary Clinton's office. You know, that's the connection you have to make to bring the criminal case.
All right. Look, we're speaking with Michael.
That's not the Inspector General report.
I'm sorry about that. We're speaking with Michael Isikoff from Yahoo News. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Yahoo News. You're tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830.
You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good morning, New England. You are tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830. He's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston, and we're joined on the phone by renowned journalist Michael Isikoff. Good morning, Michael, again.
Good morning. Hey, just to button up on the Trump judge stuff, I just want to read you what Newt Gingrich emailed to the Washington Post.
Please.
In their card. I don't know what Trump's reasoning was, and I don't care. His description of the judge in terms of his parentage is completely unacceptable. That's from Newt Gingrich, who has been probably Trump's biggest vocal supporter in Republican Party ranks, was angling for, a lot of people thought, the vice presidential slot. He was being prominently named, and here he is saying completely unacceptable about Trump's remarks. That's why I said before, I think, you know, it is possible Trump jumped the shark with this one.
Well, that is a powerful statement, because Newt Gingrich has been, I would say, actively campaigning to be the next vice president of the United States.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a very telling statement as well. Hey, right. You're with Yahoo News now. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's been a pretty good experience for me. I've been able to do a lot of, you know, really the kind of digging I like to do all across, on national security stories, on the political campaign. I was among the first to write about Trump University, actually, last August, making the point, this is a piece I'm actually kind of proud of in retrospect, that, you know, Trump is a litigious guy. And he's got lots of ongoing lawsuits going, some that, you know, have commenced since the beginning of this presidential campaign, and none of these lawsuits would go away were he to become president of the United States. We all remember Supreme Court, Paula Jones versus Bill Clinton, 9-0. Mm-hmm. Supreme Court said, you know, presidents are not immune from civil litigation. So you think these Trump University lawsuits, there are three of them, are going to go away just because he gets elected president? No. The first one's going to trial November 28th after the election. So if Trump were president-elect, the first thing he'd have to be doing would be sitting in a federal courtroom in San Diego as a defendant, being cross-examined by plaintiff's lawyers. And it wouldn't stop there. It's just something to think about when you're trying to decide who's going to be the next president.
Sounds like the thing he should do is settle them and be done with it.
But
he's a guy he's a fighter. He's not going to just roll over and pay up. That's just not his style. And that's part of what a lot of people like about him. He's a fighter. If you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about the Clintons. You were the guy that gave us a Monica Lewinsky story quite a long time ago. And, of course, the Clintons have been in the news with something, it seemed like, for the past 40 years. You know, maybe tell us a few things about, you know, the Clintons and...
Well, look, I wrote a book about Clinton and all that some years ago.
Mm. Book of the Year, actually.
I'm sorry?
You won the Book of the Year award for that, didn't you?
Book of the Month Club said it was the best nonfiction book of the year. You know, it laid out the full story of Clinton's... Bill Clinton's lies about his sexual peccadilloes, the ones that led to his impeachment. But, you know, this has been something that's been pretty well litigated. I mean, to some extent, there probably is a whole generation of young people who don't know the story and the backstory of what happened, and it's interesting. I just don't know what its relevance it would be will be to this campaign. First of all, it's Hillary Clinton running, not Bill Clinton. Certainly, she was among his biggest defenders, and he was able to escape all the accusations that were being made against him. She was among the fiercest in attacking his political enemies and suggesting all the allegations were ginned up by right-wing conspirators. And so you can certainly raise some questions about what her role was, but you know, in the vast scheme of things, I don't know how far the Trump people, and particularly Roger Stone, his biggest sort of agitator on these issues, are going to get by bringing that stuff up.
Yeah, we've had Mr. Stone on the show here a couple of times, and I tell you, he's got, I guess, about every speck of dirt you could find on the Clintons.
They're looking for a fight during the debates, it seems like. And, you know, I think it makes for good TV for 5 minutes, but is it good for the country that we're going to have our presidential debates dragged down like that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I you know, like I said, I think to some extent, you know, they could score a couple of points and raise some questions here. I just, you know, wonder to what degree is going to factor into decision making. Now, you know, that said, I just happen to have, just because, you know, when everyone scrolls, you know, on Twitter these days, happened to click on the old Lisa Myers NBC interview with Juanita Broderick. It's pretty powerful stuff. And I think young people watching that today, you know, will do a double take and say, whoa, what's up with that? But, you know, that said, again, that was Bill, not Hillary. It was a long time ago. You know, how relevant those things will be in this presidential campaign, we'll see, but I'll be skeptical if it becomes a make-or-break issue.
You know, I guess we're concerned that, you know, the first debate between Hillary and Donald will be, well, you did this in 1985, and well, but you did this last week, and you know, it'll be a non-issue kind of a debate where they won't talk about, you know, what do we do with Iran, what do we do with North Korea, what do we do with immigrants, what do we do about the economy. It'll be about, you know, what so-and-so did, you know, over the past X years, and, you know, it'll be kind of cheap shot after cheap shot.
The format for these debates is there will be top journalists there asking questions, and you can rest assured all of those issues, you know, Iran, ISIS, go down the list, immigration, there'll be very pointed, sharp questions, and people will judge how the two candidates answer the questions.
Well, let's talk about the economy a little bit, because if there was not inexpensive gas, the economy would be in shambles right now. I mean, the jobs report just came out this past week, and I had to do a double take to make sure I was reading it right, that it was so bad. And the only thing I think is propping up the economy right now is inexpensive gas, but it's on its way back up.
And low interest rates.
Exactly, low interest rates. But here we are, the most important presidential campaign probably of all of our lifetimes, and neither one of the candidates is talking about the economy. It's kind of mind-boggling.
I think that's because that's hard.
Yeah, they talk about the economy. The question is, what do they have to say? And, you know, I don't know. Look, Hillary Clinton was not in charge of the economy as when she served in the Obama administration. She was Secretary of State. So to what extent you can pin poor economic performance on her, is a question mark. Also, just remember, I mean, everything you're saying is true. That said, Obama's approval ratings are positive right now, way above Hillary Clinton's approval ratings and Donald Trump's approval ratings. So, you know, Obama is going to be out there stumping for Hillary, the White House will be doing everything it can to help elect her president. And he's got, you know, whether you like it or not, he's in the positives right now. So that's something to, you know, people have taken stock of his 7.5 years as president and said, you know, basically, we think he's done a good job.
Hey, we just have about 1 minute left with Michael Isikoff from Yahoo News. Michael, how do people follow you on Yahoo and learn more about Yahoo News and yourself?
Yahoo News, if you go to yahoonews.com, you'll see a picture of me and my stories on the right-hand corner, also at Isikoff on Twitter. So have a look.
It's been a pleasure to have such a renowned journalist like Michael Isikoff join us here on All Politics is Local. Thank you, Michael, for taking a few minutes on a Sunday morning. Best of luck.
Yeah, sure. Good talking to you.
Right. Thank you very much.
All right. You're tuned to All Politics is Local. It's the bottom of the hour. We're going to get on top of things with CBS News. Howie Carr joins us next.
You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
For over 25 years, Barbara Anderson was a relentless advocate for taxpayers across Massachusetts. Her accomplishments included leading the campaign for property tax relief, for which she was called the mother of Proposition 2.5. The repeal of the state income tax surtax, the defeat of the graduated tax ballot question, and the rollback of the temporary state income tax increase. Barbara was recognized as an outspoken grassroots advocate for decades, a co-host with Howie Carr and Jerry Williams on WRKO on their weekly The Governor's Program during the Governor DeCaucus era, a frequent guest and commentator across the media, a weekly columnist for the Salem News and the Eagle Tribune Publishing Company. To talk about her and in remembrance, we're joined by radio icon Howie Carr. Good morning, Howie. How are you?
Very good. Glad to be with you.
Thank you for coming on and talking about your great friend Barbara Anderson. Your thoughts?
Well, we have a tribute to it this afternoon down at Lombardo's in Randolph, and it's just they're calling it a celebration of life, and just thought that we're all going to sort of share our views about her, so I'll just do a little an early version of it right here. She was a great person, and she really was a mother of about 2.5. And I think that was her greatest accomplishment back in 1980. And there were attempts to do away with Prop 2.5, which froze the level of property tax increases that could be allowed under municipal law. 2.5% per annum, unless there was a voter override. I mean, without Prop 2.5 being on the books these last 35 plus years, I mean, you can only imagine how much the property tax would be in Massachusetts. And also, they as a sweetener, which I think has been kind of overlooked over the years, they put in cut the auto excise tax from $6 per thousand to $25,000. So even if you're just driving around and you don't own any property, you're just a renter, you're saving a hell of a lot of money every year thanks to Barbara Anderson.
Well, Howie, I have to tell you, many years ago when I was the chairman of the Board of Selectmen in the town of Ashland, I had my first meeting and the town manager said, well, we're going to raise taxes right to the Prop 2.5 level. And I said, well, why is the first thing that we just assume that we're going to raise it to 2.5? Well, because, because they screwed us years ago and we can't raise it any higher. I go, why don't we look to cut it, not to get to 2.5? Well, that's not how we do things. So to your point, I can only imagine how, what our taxes would look like if it hadn't been for Barbara Anderson and all of her efforts.
I live in a town where most years they put a 2.5 override on the ballot, and unfortunately, most of the time it prevails. Again, I mean, at least it has to go through the town meeting, and we have to put it on the ballot, and we all stand outside the town or in the town center every pre-election period, and we fight it out. I mean, this should not be a pro forma increase that's going through every year, and it's it's just ridiculous. If, you know, the thing is, if Trump 2.5 will pass today, I think they would try to overlook it just the way they've overlooked many other things now. I mean, I was thinking about this as I was preparing my remarks for this afternoon at Lombardo's, and you know, when Prop 2.5 was passed back in 1980, the politicians, as arrogant as they were and entrenched, they said, well, so be it. If this is what the voters want, we're going to give it to the voters. And that's not the way they operate now. You know, I mean, the income tax, the surcharge on the income tax was cut back in 2000. And here it is, 2016, and, you know, during the most recent debate about the graduated income tax in the legislature, they were bragging. Actually, they had the audacity to brag, the leadership, saying, well, we are going to cut it back to 5%. And one of the Republicans stood up and said, you're bragging about the fact that you're finally going to exercise the will of the people in 2019 after they voted in 2000 by a 60-40 margin to cut the rate? I mean, it's a different world, and unfortunately, there's less accountability now than there was when Barbara started out, I believe, fortunately.
Well, you mentioned something. They're looking for a way to raise people's taxes. You know, this 4% surcharge on the millionaires sounds good because most people aren't millionaires. But how long do you think it'd take them if they changed our Constitution to slide that bar lower and lower, and all of a sudden the guy's making, you know, $75,000 a year, which a lot of people in this Commonwealth do, they're getting a surcharge of some kind.
Right. I mean, that's the reason why the graduated income taxes have never gone anywhere on the ballot, is because people were astute enough to figure out that they were just going to get screwed, that this was just, you know, putting the camel puts its nose under the tent. And, you know, the problem is I'm not sure that the voters are paying enough attention anymore. You know, there are too many distractions. The populace is dumbed down. The education system isn't what it was. And I think they actually have a pretty good chance of getting this through, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, Howie, I want to get back to Barbara Anderson, but in the studio we've got Channel 5 on, and they just put up a picture of Donald Trump, your friend Donald Trump, and probably not your favorite Indian, Elizabeth Warren. Any comments on that this morning? I mean, Elizabeth Warren, just go away, will you?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I mean, she makes it pretty easy for him. I mean, she's a cartoon figure herself, you know, and I mean, the fact that he can keep calling her Pocahontas and she can't say anything about it in response, I mean, that goes to show where she's coming from. I mean,
I bought one of your T-shirts, by the way. I love it.
Thank you. The T-shirt worked out nicely. They're available at HowieFarshow.com. Just go to our online store. And, yeah, we're enjoying poking fun at her. And again, I still can't believe she hasn't endorsed Hillary Clinton yet. I mean, I don't know what she's waiting for. I mean, does she have an inside pipeline to the Justice Department? Are they really going to indict Hillary or what? But if I were Hillary, I'd be a little perturbed that she hasn't, gotten off the fence and endorsed me. But, you know, I guess that's the way Randy Warren is, the fake Indian.
But hey, getting back to it, we all must be getting a little bit older, Howie, because I remember when you and Jerry Williams and Barbara Anderson were on the radio, some of the best radio, I think, ever in the history of Boston. Once again, let's talk a little bit about Barbara. I mean, she was a good friend. Chip Faulkner is a good friend of Terry Hendricks and myself, and we just love what they do. I'm a proud person who has signed the No New Tax Pledge. I wear it as a badge of honor. I wish more politicians had the courage to sign it. Let's just talk a little bit more about Barbara.
Yeah, Barbara was was just someone who really, really believed in it. And you know, I always loved the story about when they were having a campaign one time, and they had gotten all these people on a bus, you know, from a public housing project or something. They said this rich woman is trying to screw you. She doesn't want you to have any tax dollars. She doesn't want you to have a nice meal every day. And so we're going to go up and demonstrate outside her house. And so they put up all these people on a bus. And so, as you guys know, she lived in Marblehead, which is not exactly in the middle of 128. It's not an easy place to get to. You got to twist and turn and go around. It's up on the North Shore. And so we finally got to her place, and they let all these people off the bus, and they said, there it is. And it looked like her little house where she lived, it looked like a tool shed. And all these people are going, that's the woman? That's the rich woman who's coming after us? This is her house? I have a bigger place than this, the public housing project. They couldn't believe it. I mean, she about material goods. She just worked hard, and she loved what she did, and she was a true believer, and you know, she was just a really good person. And you know, the thing was, Jerry and I were always kind of cynical about it, and about the political system. But she really believed it, you know. I mean, she had this little office. It was she rented it from Mike Valerio, who was the owner of at the time of Papageno's, and he owned this 3-4 story building on Tremont Street, right across the Common, which, you know, just a short walk up the Beacon Hill to the State House. And so they would operate out of there, and then she would go up there every day or so from the office, drive in from Marblehead Park, and you know, you can always in her office you can always smell the Italian cooking coming up through the lower floors, and she would go over to Beacon Hill and try to lobby these guys, and you know, she would try to actually reason with them, and you know, convince them that she was doing the right thing, and if they voted against higher taxes, it would lead to a better economy and more jobs for their constituents and all that kind of stuff. You know, in the early days, I think she actually could sway their minds and get them to change their votes. But as time went on, you guys know what happened. The legislature, the leadership, decided that they could keep these guys in line by making them all quote-unquote leaders. So they gave them all these stipends. And, you know, $7,500 to be the vice chair of the committee on dogs or whatever it was. And all these guys were bought. And, you know, there was a senator from Western Mass, Alan Sosinski, who later went crazy. And he was an interesting figure, but he hated Bulger. I'm sure he didn't like Barbara Anderson and Citizens for Limited Taxation very much. And he always used to say when he was frothing at the mouth, he'd say, "You can't talk to these people. You could buy these people with a water cooler." And you know what? I mean, it turns out he was absolutely right. Maybe not a water cooler, but you could buy him with that $7,500. They all stayed bought. And, you know, things changed for Barbara. I mean, you couldn't lobby these people anymore. They were bought, paid for. And again, what was even worse is when they just decided that we don't care if the people pass this these referendum questions. You know, I mean, it's really, you guys know, you've been in politics, what it's like to go out and get signatures. It's easy, you know. It's just, you know, you're sitting at the mall and asking people to sign, and giving you dirty looks, or you're out at the dump, and you're going out there, and then, you know, then the legislature gives you the finger, and you got to go out and get 10,000, 11,000 signatures more. It's really a complicated process, and then you have to campaign. And it's like running statewide for governor, you know, when you run one of these campaigns. And it's one thing if the legislature is going to abide by the will of the people, but now they just have no compunction whatsoever about just you know, giving you the finger and saying, "No, we're not going to. No, you voted 60-40 to cut your taxes, but we're not going to cut your taxes because we need the money for our hack friends so they can all go out from you know, $100,000 pensions and, you know, all this unused sick and vacation time, and then get another pension." And that's the new scam, getting 2, 3, 4 pensions.
Well, he's too modest to say it, but Terry Hendricks, who's sitting in the studio with me, got tens of thousands of signatures for the gas tax and helped Jeff Deal and Desiree pass that gas tax. So he's been great with that. Great.
John overstates the...
That was our great victory in recent years. Yeah. That was a wonderful thing that we were all able to accomplish. So, I was at 30-1, and we prevailed.
So, Howie, we're going to see you today at 3 to 5 p.m. at Lombardo's in Randolph, Massachusetts, remembering Barbara Anderson. Just one quick question before we let you go. You're heard every weekday from 3 to 7 on WCRN, our station here. But what happens when Trump becomes president? You vice president, or are you just going to be the press secretary? What's going to happen?
I'm holding up for Maitre D. at Mar-a-Lago. That's the job I'm qualified for. That's the job I want.
The great Howie Carr joining us. We'll see you later today, Howie. Thanks for coming on.
See you in Randolph. Hope to see everybody there. Okay. Right. I'll talk to you guys. Bye-bye.
Great.
It's great having you. Howie Carr on All Politics is Local, WCRN.
You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good morning, New England. 50,000 watts of political talk all across New England. You are tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830. He's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston. But an action-packed morning so far. Michael Isikoff from Yahoo News and radio legend Howie Carr have joined us so far this morning. But one thing that we want to get to is my co-host, Terry Hendricks. You were just down in the D.C. area and Rolling Thunder.
Yes,
I saw you on Fox News, I believe.
Yeah. We a bunch of us go down every year to Rolling Thunder. For those of you who don't know what Rolling Thunder is, it's actually a tribute to POWs missing in action, and primarily Vietnam. Although it's certainly spread to the guys that I go down with, a lot of them are Boston firefighters. One's I think in Norwood and another one's in Attleboro. A really good group of guys. They're all veterans. Couple of Purple Heart winners in the group. Really good group of guys. And unfortunately, the guy really started this run from Boston, so to speak, passed away back in April. Shout out to Bob DeJange, also known as Papa Bear, and if you ever knew him, he could be very, bearish, take your head off, and then next moment, very caring, but, pretty great guy. And
sounds like somebody else I know.
Yeah. Well, and we certainly missed him this year. Shout out to Papa Bear.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been doing that for what?
Oh, 9 or 10 years. Yeah. I've kind of lost track. But a good group of guys. A lot of them are Boston firefighters. And we go down, we ride down on our bikes. This year, we stopped at Antietam. And interesting, 22,100 Americans died in 12 hours.
Wow.
One of the bloodiest battles of any time in America. Certainly, more were lost, at Gettysburg, for instance, but that was three or four days.
Mm-hmm.
So, anybody who's traveling down south, a lot of interesting history at Antietam, which is on the Maryland border. And, of course, Gettysburg is another very interesting place. But
would you guys all meet in the parking lot at the Pentagon, right?
Well, that's for Rolling Thunder. We basically fill up all the parking lots at the Pentagon. And, we were down there. We ride our bikes over at 5:30 in the morning and park them, then walk back to their hotel because we're not that far away from the Pentagon. And it fills up. It's something to see. You wouldn't think Harley Davidson had manufactured that many motorcycles, but they have. And most of them are Harleys. the group, a lot of the guys there are my age, Vietnam veterans. More veterans, younger are there. So I hope it continues. It's something that's been going on now, I think, 26, 27 years, something like that. And they do the parade. They ride around, the mall there, and it's pretty well organized.
Had a pretty good speaker this year.
Yeah, Donald J. Trump. I didn't get to see him. I missed Sarah Palin a couple of years ago. She was down there a couple of years ago, and so.
Well, I thought that was great that Trump came out. I think that smart politically as well. I mean, Michael Isikoff earlier this morning says he thinks the Donald Trump campaign has jumped the shark, but I think as long as Trump keeps doing those types of events, I don't think he's jumped the shark. What were your comments about Isikoff's comments? Newt Gingrich came out with a bold statement this morning as well, denouncing Trump's take on the Mexican ethnicity of the judge. I thought his comments about John McCain were going to sink his campaign. So what do I know? So
yeah, exactly. I agree. I think, like I said, November's a long time. I think it's just one more. I'm not even sure it's a bump in the road for Donald Trump. He's already secured enough delegates to be the nominee. And we've still got a couple more primaries to go. A big one in California.
Yep, so that's Tuesday.
I'm saying he's going to get at least 1,400 delegates.
Well, I think he is, and he's going to, of course, be the Republican nominee. The one thing that really, and I'm being sincere when I say this, scares me now is the violence that we're starting to see outside of any of these Trump events. I thought Democrats were supposed to be tolerant and understanding people, and it seems like they're starting the violence. They're starting the protests. Some of the Trump people are, of course, not walking away. You know, you don't have to accept an invitation to every fight you get invited to, but it seems like some of the Trump supporters are accepting the invitations. I think Cleveland's going to just be, an ugly time in American history, unfortunately.
It might be. It just might be. I hope not, but it might be. I think if I were the governor of Ohio...
John Kasich?
Yeah, I would be... I'd be having the National Guard ready, whatever they've got to do to keep peace. But I don't understand, these peace-loving Democrats. I don't understand why they're out there basically creating violence.
One of the scenes that I saw that, I bleed red, white, and blue. Burning an American flag and Mexican flags being waved at a protest outside a Trump event in California on Thursday night.
Yeah.
Really? Really?
I'm sorry, folks, if you don't like the red, white, and blue, go back to the green and orange or whatever the hell it is.
Get out.
Yeah. See ya.
Yeah.
Trains leaving daily, hourly.
I mean, Trump's plan is to get rid of you anyway, but come on. Really? I understand that people, the greatest thing about this country is you have your freedom of speech and you have your freedom of protest. But where are the Democratic leaders not denouncing a burning of American flag?
Well, I think they like what they see.
Really? Breaks my heart.
Well,
508-871-7000, 508-871-7000. That is telling, it tells you everything you need to know about the mindset of America right now.
Oh, it's a subset of America. It's not a majority, thank God.
You're a Democrat. You still love the red, white, and blue, and you don't come out and speak out of it. That means you condone it. Where I come, leaders lead. That all the time. Leaders lead, and no leader is leading on this one, and it's terrible.
I agree, but I think we're just seeing the beginning of it. It's going to be a long, hot summer.
It is. It's going to be a long, hot summer. A couple of communities are worried about, that it is going to be a long, hot summer. What's going on in Chicago? Hey, it's the top of the hour. We're going to get on top of things with CBS News. You're tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN. At 11:05, we're going to be joined by Joanne Bamberger, who wrote the book, Love Her Not, The Hillary Paradox. Should be a great interview. You're tuned to All Politics is Local, WCRN. We'll be right back.